materials right here.
Just in the nick of time, right?
We have the book.
I aim to please.
Yes. Let's just say the Robert Rules of Order expanded.
I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. It is February 8th, 2017, 4:30 p.m. We are in the Sierra Room at the Community Center at 851 East Williams Street. Let's see. Kathy, can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Bonkowski.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Smolenski.
Here.
Commissioner Bagwell.
Here.
Commissioner Kimbrough. Commissioner Zantino.
Yes.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Kathy. Just an addendum management notice. The chair may take items out of order, combine two or more agenda items for consideration and or remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. At this time, we're going to move on to item two on the agenda, which is public comment. Is there anybody here in the audience tonight that is here for general public comment? You can also, if you have public comment on a specific item that's going to be coming up, you can speak at that time, but otherwise we'll take general public comments now. I see nobody walking up, so we will move on to item three, approval of the minutes. Have the commission members read the minutes? If so, I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve the minutes of January 11th, 2017 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? I see no discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We're on to item number four, public meeting items. Item 4A for possible action to approve route changes for routes 2A, 2B, and 3 of the Jump Around Carson fixed route system. Graham, you're taking this?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Thank Chair. With an improved scheduling, dispatching, and bus tracking software implemented in December 2015, staff has been tracking JAC system performance while accessing and analyzing more and better data. So as a result, staff has identified an issue with the system's reliability as presented during the December 14, 2016 RSTC meeting. Staff then developed a set of proposed changes to present to the public during a public meeting on January 10, 2017. Public comment and input from operations staff was well received, but staff was still faced with tough choices in its need to balance demands of things like coverage area versus system reliability and ridership. The final recommendations being presented before you today are a result of this process and vary to some degree from the version presented previously. So the proposal for Route 3 remains unchanged as from the previous version, but each of the proposed changes to 2A and 2B have been modified since the initial proposal prior to the public comment period. The first one, which is not included in the backup, is the removal of the proposed changes to the area along Desitoya Drive. Staff has determined the cost benefit to be such that it would be better to simply leave that option or that portion of the route as it is. The first change actually included in the backup for 2A, 2B is the change to the area bounded by Research Way, Old Hot Springs Road, and Gonai Road, with College Parkway cutting through the middle. The previous proposal had both routes 2A and 2B using Research Way and Gonai Road to the north of College Parkway only, as it was with the original configuration. The final recommendation is a compromise that has Route 2A going to the north only of College Parkway and Route 2B going to the south only. There was an outpouring of support from staff at the Nevada Health Center on research just south of college that bus service should remain directly in front of their building in order to better serve the folks who go there and are typically less mobile. While there will continue to be a bus route in front of their building, the service will only go in one direction. So the options for people who wish to travel in the other direction can either extend their ride by several minutes and take the same route that serves it all the way around and back to their destination, or they can walk across the new signalized intersection at College and Research and catch, the other route on the other side. So after talking with Sierra Nevada Health staff about this version of the proposed change, they were happy with the compromise. So we felt that it was, a good solution overall. And the final recommended route change to also to 2A and 2B is in the area of Nye Lane and Airport Road. Under the original proposal, 2A and 2B would travel along Nye Lane between Lompa and Airport, but the revised proposal straightens the path of travel, allowing the buses to remain on Airport for the entire stretch between College and US 50. This results in not only a slightly greater time savings, but it maintains service to multifamily developments and higher density single-family homes in the area, which have higher potential for generating ridership. And finally, associative changes to time points are recommended and based on average traveling speed of vehicles on each route. For those changes to the system that are approved, the implementation process will involve updating route maps, the JAC website and app, training drivers and staff, disseminating public information, installation and removal of bus stop signs. The proposed go-live date for changes would be such that plenty of time is provided for the items just listed and should be done on Saturday so that it is at the start of the week. If we operated on Sundays, the changes would go into effect on a Sunday. But the end result of that is a projected implementation date of April 1st, 2017. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Do we have any questions from the commissioners? Lord, go ahead.
So forgive me, I'm new on this committee, so I might have to learn a little bit about JAC. And I am interested, when I looked at Route 2A, 2B with the Nye-Sherman changes, it is removing the bus stops all from Lompa and the Nye and the Sherman. So all those bus stops are removed. And one of the things I read was your objective is to have no more than a quarter mile for an individual to have to walk to get to the bus stop. So in keeping with that, so we're picking time over distance. Am I understanding this correctly, that you believe that being on time was more important than the distance an individual had to walk to get to a bus stop?
It's a delicate balance, but obviously we were having reliability issues. That was a main concern that we identified, and so we saw this no change is ideal, but we saw this as an opportunity to this area as an opportunity to make a change that would create the smallest impact to potential riders and get this system on time and more reliable.
And then just to clarify for me, we don't actually know how many people pick up the bus at a particular stop. So you know how many passes you sold or things like that, but you don't know where an individual actually has been getting on the bus.
That is correct. We do have very small samples that we've done in the past, so we have very small sample data, but we don't have a whole picture of that ridership, spatially speaking, but we are working on that as well.
And did we receive any public comment from any of the residents within this area?
Along Nye Sherman, no. There was one resident who did not disclose his address, but he did say that he lived in the area. Was not a bus rider, just curious about the changes. I explained them to him, and he didn't see an issue, but of course he's not a bus rider, so I guess he couldn't make a full judgment on it. But other than that, we didn't receive any other comments.
And the noticing provision, so when I drive through the areas, there's some that just have a sign that says I'm a bus stop versus having a full place to sit down. So how the notices were on the bus then, I assume? That
correct. Yes, they were on all buses and okay. In all shelters. Yes, okay. All shelters.
Graham, can you step back for a minute and just kind of review for us the implications of not being able to run the routes timely So it's a circuit, right? And so every time the circuit needs to leave at a certain time and get back at a certain time?
Correct. All buses arrive at the transfer center at the same time. So if one bus is late and the other three are on time, we can't hold the other three to set the entire system back. So in that case, the person on a bus arriving late to the transfer would miss their transfer. And then since we are running on hour headways, they would have to wait an entire hour for the bus that they are trying to catch to come back and get them at the transfer. So on time and reliability is extremely important.
So, Graham, you know, I've struggled looking at the diagram on 2A, 2B for the college research. And so prior to these proposed changes, they came eastbound on college to research, looped up around and back. Is that correct?
Are you talking about the current system or the previous version of the proposed changes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just looking at this diagram is very hard because,
yes.
And you look at the legend, you got proposed, you got existing, and you got things over and top. And so 2A has always been there.
Yes. So 2A, I'll take you all the way through the.
Make sure you qualify always.
So, yes, as Patrick referenced, the original version of the routes was they only served that northern part of the loop, north of college. So they didn't go south on research and go and I down there. But the current system, yes, 2A. So if you're looking at 2A, that goes clockwise. So you're headed eastbound on college from Walmart. And what they currently do is they head north onto Research, as is shown here, east onto Old Hot Springs, south onto Gonai. They cross College Parkway, still on Gonai, all the way down to Research, north on Research, and when they hit college, then they head east towards, like, the airport. That's what they currently do.
And so then 2B, and 2B has always been the one that has gone to the health center.
No, originally neither of them went there, but when the health center was built and we eventually
put in a stop
there and altered the route to go there, both routes.
So as it stands right now with these two routes, basically it's just some repositioning of stops, correct? Is that right?
If I may, right now both buses loop the north and the south loop. It's very circuitous, but you get services in both directions for both routes. With this service, only route 2B will be serving the south side of the loop, and only route 2A will be serving the north side. So that means that if you're at Sierra Health Center and you want to get on a bus, you will be able to get on Route B directly in front of Sierra Health Center. But if you want to go in the other direction, you'd have to cross College Parkway and get on that little blue stop on the north side of College Parkway to get on 2A.
Thank you, guys.
So the change going in front of the health center, it sounds like last we heard it was people that potentially have health issues, some elderly and the like, and now with the bus only going one direction, if somebody were to not cross the street and get on the bus at that point, what's the added time to get that person back to where, if they were going to the transfer station, and how much time is added onto their route?
Sure. So it would depend on where exactly they were going, for example, if you were trying to get to over here by Woodside and Airport in the Food Max area, you would ride 2B. You would be at Walmart at about 3 minutes past the hour, and then you wouldn't get back to Food Max, for example, till the next 49 past the hour. So, you know, it's about 45 minutes in that area.
That's the one direction of travel. It would take you some time to go in the other way as well.
Correct. Yeah. If you were able, if you crossed the street, yeah, if you wanted to cross the street, yeah, you would. It would probably be about
Graham. 10. I think what the actual question is, what's the difference between the current route and the new route? So if you were going from the Walmart to the Food Max now, how long would that take?
Currently that would take you approximately 14 minutes.
Can you, so Route 3, then, were we going to do a bus stop in front of City Hall, or?
There is one currently, yes.
Currently,
yes.
And that no change is occurring. We're just going to keep that, but it's not going to get covered or something. Is that what we're doing at City Hall with the bus stop?
We recently made a small change to Route 3 that wasn't as significant, and that was that the inbound bus that's going north on Division Street, instead of going up to Robinson and turning, it turns on Musser now, and it turns east to go, you know, right, turning east on Musser, and then it turns left and actually has a stop in front of City Hall. We did that right after the downtown project was complete, and we will keep that stop under this plan.
And it is or isn't going to get a shelter?
It's possible to do one, but we're still evaluating because we do have with City Hall there, and there is a covering there.
Okay.
Where we haven't decided for sure that we need one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to open this up to public comment. If there's anybody here in the public that came to speak to this issue, go ahead and come up to the podium now. Nobody. Okay. All right. I'm going to bring it back to the commission and entertain either a motion or some additional discussion.
So there's really no alternative that you could find to reduce that amount of time that we're adding on the bus route? That's an extra half hour. So your indication is I come to a main area to catch a bus, and I would have to wait an hour if I missed it to pick the next bus. And so now I'm just going to put them on the bus for a half hour longer anyway.
You're mixing two separate issues. The one issue about the extra half an hour is valid. If someone is not willing or able to cross the street to go on the other side of College Parkway, and they end up riding the loop in the longer direction, they could spend an extra half an hour. That is correct. The other issue is the reliability of the entire system. So there are positives and negatives to everything. By doing what is proposed, you do have that potential negative impact for people at this location. And while the health center is happy with this, but there is that possible negative. If we don't do something to shorten the routes, what we have is a worsening problem with riders of the entire system of all four routes are being impacted currently by buses, including these, not getting to the downtown transfer point on time. So the one-hour impact is being felt sporadically. But unfortunately, our on time, as we mentioned, is below 80% now. It's not consistent, but it is periodically happening, and it affects everybody. And yes, if it does happen, then you're waiting for an hour.
And where's the downtown transfer station? Where is that?
It's on Plaza Street in front of the federal building, just north of the Carson City Nugget downtown.
The old post office.
Which is also where several other bus systems also stop, including Blue Go, the Washoe RTC Intercity, which is jointly funded by the Carson City RTC.
Patrick or Graham, you know, getting back to this, how often, I guess, is the question, does that mishap of not all the buses arriving at the transfer station, how often is, I mean, is there, has there been a discussion or as to how often that does happen? And if it does, I mean, do you also take into account certain other little intricacies that might cause that problem, you know, due to a traffic accident or something where they are delayed? I mean, is there some way that, you know, your bus operators can communicate with each other and say, hey, I'm 5 minutes behind?
That absolutely happens, and that's happened since we started, and we do. And, you know, and Mike Megan, come up, your operations manager and general manager for the contractor are here this evening as well. That absolutely does happen, the communication between them. We did, it got to the point actually several years ago that it was happening that we actually did have to set a standard that that buses can't wait more than 3 minutes for the other ones to arrive, because beyond that point, you ran the risk of having a cascading effect on the system. So they do definitely communicate with each other, and there are other things that can happen. We now, the newer buses that we have don't have these big slow mechanical lifts; they have ramps, so that does speed the process of loading disabled folks, which we're happy to transport. But if you have that can be an occurrence. If you have several of them on one run, that can slow you down, for example, and can be an occurrence that does happen. And they do notice it at certain times of the day that have higher ridership as well. It's more frequent to happen during those times. So while they do have procedures in place, it's beyond the point of just of the coordination.
And there was one of the, in reading the report, in that there is a goal of percentage that you'd like to achieve in that reliability, I think the word is you guys are using?
Yes, it's part of our Title VI plan, system standards. It's 85%. Right now we're right around 80%. And to your point of, are there other factors, such as road construction or something to that effect, the software that we have, they do track on-time performance such that if a driver is so far out of the range of the transfer, they when they enter the stop, the stop will become invalid, and so that one will be thrown out of the calculation for the on-time percentage. So it's somewhat factored in, but not completely accounting for those things.
Graham, if we don't meet our goals, our 85% goal, does that have the potential to affect any of the federal funding that we receive for JAC?
It could. I've never seen that one aspect of the Title VI plan cause the FTA to withhold funding. I mean, they may bring it to your attention that, you know, they want you to focus special resources towards correcting that. But I've never seen a case where they withhold funding for that reason alone.
And was there also an issue with the routes running late so that when the drivers got back that they didn't have adequate time to take, say, a restroom break or
That's
before
correct.
They had to
yeah,
leave
there,
again?
Yes, there's 6 minutes of leeway there from the time the buses arrive at the transfer to the time they're supposed to depart again. So arriving late obviously leaves you with one, two, or zero, you know, minutes to unload people and load the other set of folks and take your restroom break. And there's obviously not going to be enough time in that time frame.
I think it's important to note that the folks that would experience that additional 30 minutes is a very low percentage. If a person is disabled and correct me if I'm wrong, Graham, if a person is disabled and they do not, and fixed route does not work for them, they are eligible for paratransit, which is a curb-to-curb facility. So if that scenario does happen, there are, you know, there's paratransit to provide that service to reduce the 30 minutes. But, you know, we're trying to weigh reliability, you know, and so that's do we make the whole system reliable versus a small percentage of the ridership that's going to be affected? So that was kind of the balance that we were trying to do. And we did have discussions with the operators to get their feel of the ridership for all these changes. And so while we don't have actual counts, we do have in-field, you know, experience that helps us make those decisions.
And I would add to that, Dirk, that so first, it's only going to affect the passengers that don't qualify for the paratransit, who can't or won't walk across College Parkway to the other bus stop, and that's the maximum weight that somebody on the route would have, because that's the largest gap for any of the ridership between points. Is that correct?
That's correct, and you're also assuming that they have to take a transfer, which means that they have to go all the way around to the transfer, or they have to go to the other side of 2B, the west side of the city. So it's not, you know, it is a small percentage.
Okay. I move to approve route changes for routes 2A, 2B, and 3 of the Jump Around Carson fixed route service.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any final discussion? I see none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We are moving on to item 4B for possible action to direct staff to pursue the proposed pavement preservation capital projects for fiscal year 2017-2018. Patrick.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to talk about the expenditure of RTC, Regional Transportation Commission, gas tax funds for making improvements to our streets in the coming fiscal year. Last year was actually the first year that we were on a schedule similar to this. We recognized an opportunity to start at this time of the year regarding our project preparation to try to ensure that we can actually construct the projects for next fiscal year during this calendar year. We think that is important to use the funds as they become available as soon as we can, because our funding is limited in our ability to be able to make the improvements that we can. We've discussed a little bit of this with this group. We've also discussed with the traffic group, the Transportation Resource Advisory Forum for Carson City, previously as well. One of our RTC members, Member Bagwell, was there at the most recent meeting, and we discussed these improvements as well. But I will I'll give an overview of what the concept is. We have approximately $1.6 million in estimated RTC funds available for next fiscal year to make repairs to our roads. They are eligible to be used for a number of different types of improvements. All city-owned streets are eligible. They can be used for pavement-type projects, for sidewalks. There are a lot of different options available there. What we are proposing is to pursue, at this time, it's estimated about $1.3 million worth of projects, because these are very early cost estimates. We're being conservative on the amount of available funds. We haven't gone through the whole budgeting process yet, so we're being fairly conservative there. We've identified a total of 9 projects that are included in your packet that are 8 of them are sealing projects on arterial and collector streets. Those are the bigger roads in town. And one of them is what we call a mill and overlay project, where you actually remove the top 2 inches of surface and repave that. The concept that we're using is that we're trying to do as much as we can with the funding available and to prioritize the larger streets in Carson City. That arterial and collector network is only about 30% of the miles of roads in the city, but it carries the vast amount of traffic on city streets. So in the packet, I'll just list these briefly, the roads that we have identified. Portions of these roads are Airport Road, Arrowhead Drive Medical Parkway, Carson River Road, West College Parkway, Edmonds Drive, Fifth Street, Coons Lane, and Stewart Street. Those are the streets. Those are all collector arterials that would have some sort of a seal coating done. If approved at this meeting, our engineering staff, project manager would be assigned and would evaluate the specific type of sealing to be done. There are options, including slurry seals and micro seals that we've done in the past, cape seals, chip seals. There are different options that have different benefits that are appropriate for different types of roads. I will point out a couple of important points. Number one, we are using our pavement management system for this. That means that the system, with all of its algorithms and mathematics and data that it has in it, is seeking to optimize the use of the funds available. And in these cases, it's seeking to extend the life of these roads. Because these roads were picked, it doesn't mean that those are the worst roads in the city. Those are the ones that can benefit the most and extend the lives of those roads with the available funds. Another important consideration for us is the Americans with Disabilities Act provisions. There are very clear guidelines from the U.S. Department of Transportation, U.S. Department of Justice, nationwide. This is applied everywhere, that require that should a certain level of work be done on a road, Americans with Disabilities Act compliance is required for certain facilities. And that is having, that has an impact on us. It has an impact in a lot of places. I actually had an opportunity recently to discuss this with, it was actually a colleague in Salem, Oregon, and he was reporting to me the large percentage of their road budget that's actually going to fix ADA sidewalks as required by federal regulation, and it's actually reducing the amount of projects that they can do because they're that much more expensive. It's not that we disagree with the implementation of ADA improvements. Of course, we support that. We've our record is very clear that we've done a lot of work to do a lot of ADA improvements around, but it is a limiting factor for us when we have such relatively meager resources to try to do the repairs that we should be doing. So at least in this form, we are, for example, on Stewart Street from Carson up to William Streets. It is what we're suggesting is that we may do what's called a slurry seal there. While there isn't a big cost difference between a slurry seal and a micro sealing project, they're both beneficial for the road. We might prefer to do a micro sealing, but if we do a micro sealing, we'll be required to evaluate all of the ramps in that area. And I think it was about 50 ramps, and it's not that all of them aren't compliant. Some of them certainly are, but it would have the potential that if we had to do more work that we'd actually not be able to treat one of the other roads on this list. The other project that is not a sealing project, that's a more significant construction project called the Millen Overlay, is on College Parkway between Nye and Sherman Lanes. That's a road that on a scale of 0 to 100, it's in about the 50-50 scale. I'm looking at Dirk, person who runs pavement management. It's in about the scale of 50, and the point of that is that it's not to the point where it actually requires full reconstruction today, but it's beyond the point at which a seal coating will be significantly helpful for that road. So there's an opportunity now, if you do a Millen overlay on that, you'll significantly extend the life. Whereas if you don't do that in your future, you'll get to the point where you'll just need a full reconstruction. As I mentioned, the timing on this is consistent with what we did last year. Even though these are not large, expensive projects, each of them, there is a lot of work that goes into getting these done. And our goal would be to get a contract before this body for potential approval, ideally in June, which means we award it in June. We wouldn't work on it until July with a new fiscal year for the budget year. But that would be the ideal situation. If it's July, that's okay too. But we want to aim for June. And but before we can do that, we have to evaluate the ADA conditions on some of these and potentially let a smaller contract from a different contractor go out and fix some sidewalks before these projects take place. And then another important point is that prior to these projects, it's a really good idea to go out there and fill potholes and do crack sealing on these roads before you put these projects down. And that is something that we do in-house. And we all know that this has been a difficult last, you know, specifically about 5 weeks, particularly with the weather. And we all know that we've seen more potholes out there and some cracks that are being widened more than you would have expected. So we're going to have to be evaluating as we go through here what work is going to be required to make sure that we do that type of work, because there's going to be more of it now, and we're not in denial over that. So that's the process we want to get going. So we're looking for approval from the RTC to go down that road. We're not awarding any contracts today, but because it's the time period we're in, we'd like approval to move forward down this road. Sorry for the pun. Unintentional.
Questions for Patrick? Go ahead, Jack.
So a few meetings ago, there was some kind of an outline of the roads that were kind of on the path, but they were graded, I don't know what it was, 1 to 5 or something, of talking about those roads that were on the path to failure, and that when those roads hit that level, that it becomes incredibly expensive to rebuild rather than just repair the roads. So is the way that this plan laid out, does that minimize the risk of roads around the city getting to the point of failure?
Well, yes, yes, absolutely. This, like I said, the intent of this is to extend the life and extend the life of roads that are in a condition where their life can be extended. There are absolutely roads in the city that deserve to be reconstructed today, and there are more that are going to continue moving in that direction despite the work we're looking at here. So we just don't have the resources available to prevent all of those. So, for example, that portion of College Parkway, the mill and overlay, that's an opportunity right there to do something that's less expensive than full reconstruction. But there are, you know, we could certainly be doing 3 or 4 of those easily if we had the resources to do that. There are absolutely more places that we should be going to address that issue that you specifically brought up, which is a real issue. But this is the best we can do with the available funds.
So when we look to pick these roads, so I'm trying to remember another project that we may be doing on like Sierra Vista Lane. So I saw that you have the Carson River Road. Do we also select those for any economies of scales or anything that we can, if we're going to be in an area, extend there and do the rest of the road or something because we're going to be in the area and we might be able to save a little on a contract?
Well, no, the coordination of projects is absolutely correct. Based, and you have to look at everything from actual, you know, you don't want to be building two roads right next to each other at the same time, for example. But also based on things like funding source. Something that doesn't show up on here that we've talked about previously as well is Silver Sage Drive. We're looking to reconstruct a portion of that. It's a different funding source, different timeline, and that luckily can be kind of a standalone, and there's no conflict. The Sierra Vista Lane project that you mentioned is also, not only is it a different funding source, but it's actually a different method of implementation. It's a federal funding source we've never received before, and it's implemented in a way we've never done before. The federal government is actually going to do the implementation. And while we will be in the same geographic area, they're the ones going to be letting those contracts, and we won't be letting those contracts. So the important thing for us is to make sure that we're not doing this Carson River Road project at the same time they're out there, and we'll make sure that we're aware of that and the timing. We'll be, you know, we're working very closely with Central Federal Lands, and then we'll work with our own staff to make sure that we don't do the project at the same time.
All right, at this time, I'll open this item up to public comment. Is there anybody from the public that came to speak to this item tonight? Going once, going twice. Nope. All right, I will bring it back to the commission and entertain a motion.
I move to direct staff to pursue the proposed pavement preservation capital projects for fiscal year 2017-2018.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We are now on to item 5, internal communications and administrative matters, non-action items. First up is 5A, street operations activity report. Are you taking this, Patrick?
I will, and I'm just going to go to the last page because the story is, you know, has really been, you know, rain, snow. Unfortunately, that's been a very large demand on a lot of different people in the city. I saw a report this morning about the Parks Department reports, and of course, Public Works has been working very diligently, as we all know, to deal with a lot of road issues around town, and we'll remind the public to stay safe and stay out of any flooded areas. And we've been out there looking at different roads. In fact, someone actually contacted Supervisor Bagwell yesterday, and we were getting so low on bodies that I actually went out and looked at a road that had some water that was scouring out underneath some concrete. So, and we got some material in there, and it was good. But we have a lot of issues that are going on, and it's a combination of you know, the day-to-day getting out there and also assessing the damage as we go. So I'll thank our city staff members and other folks that we work with for all their hard work, and I don't have to remind everybody that yes, this is causing damage and expense, but we're continuing to work through it.
Patrick, before we go on, and I know that this isn't your area, but have you talked to Darren? Do you know what the projections are for tomorrow?
No, actually, I haven't talked to him particularly. I've seen, you know, probably what's publicly available to everybody out here regarding. And now I just saw the high wind warning as well, and it scared me a little bit because it was saying, you know, maybe the worst in years, and I thought it was windy just the other night. So no, I haven't seen the really good stuff you got out of the fire department and the like, not as of yet. But yes, we know there's more coming.
Okay, on to item 5B, project status report.
Okay, the blue line ADA sidewalk improvements. That is. Project we're looking forward to mention previously. I think we are getting close to having that go out for quotes. That's actually under 100,000, so it doesn't require a formal bid process, which is good as well because it lets us move more quickly. But we want to make sure we keep you up to date on that, and then we will be coordinating with the restriping of the blue line. We're obviously getting this done before the restriping happens. Not that anybody's out there in today's weather wanting to do it anyway. The Carson City Freeway multi-use path, we are working on the what's called the LPA agreement, the local public agency agreement. We are doing everything we can to get that in front of you next month. It's going to be an amendment to the freeway multi-use path. The value of the amendment is going to be about $325,000. The way we do these is that we previously had action from the RTC to enter the agreement and authorize me to sign certain amendments within limitations, but I believe that this will exceed those limitations. So we need to bring that back to the RTC because of the significant value of adding Airport Road. But the bottom line is that we're working on that. We're working on design, and we still expect to construct that this summer. The flashing yellow arrow intersection improvement project, that's the intersection of Carson Winnie and Roop and Robinson. The concrete work is basically done. We were waiting for several weeks for the equipment to come in, new mast arms and signal heads. People are going to really notice the difference when those signal heads go up. Now the equipment has arrived, and now it's just a matter of weather to get that complete. But we continue to, for example, we have incurred costs, and we've already sought the reimbursements at 95%, and I think we just submitted a reimbursement claim for that as we go along. Sierra Vista Lane, actually much has happened since the last time RTC met. The Central Federal Lands, the federal folks showed up really in force. It was really an impressive show of different types of engineers and designers and construction management folks. We were going through 30% plans. We had our real property manager, Rob Fellows, and Dirk Goring are the three main ones that are working on it. They've been going through the plans, and then yesterday Dirk had meetings with Parks to talk about the improvements at the trailheads, and while Member Kimbrough couldn't be here, Member Kimbrough actually had some comments personally for this, and he actually joined Parks and Dirk for a meeting yesterday, And then later in the afternoon, Dirk and Rob Fellows met with the Mexican Dam Homeowners Association. They had four representatives there, and they were we got an email today of saying how happy they were that they were being included, and they had the opportunity to review the documents as they went forward. So that's making good progress, and we appreciate their input, and as well as from Parks as well, of course. And then finally, Sonoma Street is now actually out to bid. Not sure what the closing date is, but I expect that we won't have it for you for the March meeting, but we would have it to you for the April meeting for potential award. And then I'll only add that a couple projects we'll add in for future ones are the Silver Sage project, for which we have an LPA agreement pending, and then the Long Line we'll bring back as well, because we will be looking to award a Long Line contract. I think that this current fiscal year, I think the cost for the Long Line striping was about $170,000. It is an expensive undertaking. We want to make sure it gets the recognition that it deserves because of the number of dollars we do have to spend on it. And that's about it. I'll take any questions.
The weather hasn't helped that either, the striping.
No.
Do we have any questions from the commissioners on the street operations activity report or the project status report? No? All right. The future agenda items, Patrick?
Let's see. We previously had a contract approved that provided for the purchase immediately of two 35-foot buses, the ones you see on the road today, and it had the option for three additional vehicles. We're going to exercise the option on one of those vehicles. If we had the money, we'd do all three. But now that we have enough money for one, we're going to order the one. So we expect to come back to you for approval of that at the next meeting. We're also going to provide you an update on the state Medicaid, the DHCFP, Division of Healthcare Financing and Policy, the work we do with the JAK system for reimbursement of Medicaid patients. I'll give you a hint, it's good news. Those two LPA agreements that we talked about. And then two other things of importance are that we very much hope to be sharing information on the results of the TAP application process, the Transportation Alternatives Program. That was actually, I look back, it was September that we submitted those and gave our proposals, and that has indicated they're very close to making an announcement. There were actually two from Carson City, one for South Carson Street, one for another extension of the freeway multi-use path, and in the Campo area there was also an application from Dayton. So we're waiting for the formal announcement of who will be funded, which projects will be funded. And then finally, for the public good, March 1st, at 5:30 p.m. in this room is going to be the second public meeting on the South Carson Street Complete Streets Corridor Study. And we're going to be doing a lot of notification next week, whether it be through newspaper, online resources, direct mailing, and even door-to-door handing out to folks, business owners and property owners, to make sure that they know that we're making progress on the conceptual ideas for South Carson Street, and we're seeking their input.
What time is that?
5:30 p.m. on March 1st at the Sierra Room at the Community Center.
Patrick, we had, was it a two-year commitment on the pricing for the buses when we ordered those?
It was one, the initial year plus three option years.
So I guess the point is, does the cost go up if you don't buy one for 2 years?
Oh, yes. The cost did go up slightly in their proposal. Yeah, they factored that in.
Any future agenda items from the commissioners? Nope. Okay, we're on to item six, board comments. Status reports or comments from any members of the RTC board? Jack, anything? Lori?
No, thank you.
Moving on to item seven, final public comment. This is the opportunity for anybody in the public, final chance for public comment. If there's anybody in the audience that would like to come up to the podium and speak. And I see nobody. Okay, we are on to item eight for possible action to adjourn. Can I motion
to adjourn?
We are adjourned. Thank you all for coming.